As some of you know, I work with computers. I've worked in IT now for 18 years, and I do a technical job that needs experience and knowledge of corporate computer environments. I want you to imagine for me, just for a moment, that we have a new temp who started at work. Maybe somebody to do the filing, somebody to deliver the post to the desks, that kind of thing. Imagine that this chap is a fairly young guy, 30-ish or so, and after we've been chatting to him for a day or two, we discover that he's a biblical studies graduate. Not that there's anything wrong with being a biblical studies graduate, but that's quite a different discipline to the technical involved world of computing. Now, let's picture the scene. There I am one day, deep involved in solving a technical problem on one of the servers. It's an intractable technical problem. I've been working on it for a few days now, and it's really stretching my experience and my abilities. And I just really don't know where to go with the problem. And this temp, this biblical studies graduate, pops along and sits down next to me and has a quick look at what I'm doing, and he says, "Do you know what you want to do? You want to reformat the hard disk and start all over again." You don't have to know very much about computers to know that suggestion is entirely inappropriate and would actually, far from solving the problem, would make it a lot worse. What would be my reaction? Well, I probably wouldn't say it, but I would certainly think it. What's this idiot talking about? He hasn't got the first clue how to solve this problem. And I'd certainly want to get rid of him as soon as possible and get on with the job. Well, let me change the example for you. Maybe you're at home and you're doing the laundry. Perhaps you do it on a Monday morning. Perhaps it's tomorrow morning. And there you are with the washing box, and you're sorting the washing into the whites and into the coloureds and so on. And there's a knock on the back door, and you open the door, and it's a couple of Jehovah's Witnesses come to sell you their version of the truth and try and flog you their magazine. And it's a man and a lady together, and they notice that you're in the middle of doing your washing. And they can see you've got piles of whites and piles of coloureds. And the lady says to you, do you know how to get your washing really, really clean? Just put it all in together, all the whites and the coloureds, put them all in together and put it on a boil wash. That'll get your washing really clean. I hope even the most laundry-challenged men in the congregation realise if you do that, your whites will not stay white for very long. When clearly unqualified people offer us advice that sounds stupidly crazy, against every common sense suggestion, then we're not very, very quick, are we not, to dismiss them as cranks, idiots, people who just haven't got a clue about even the basics of life, never mind the complexities and the important matters. Well, the passage that we've read tonight together in Luke chapter 5, I think this is a very, very similar scene to the two modern examples that I've given to you. Here are Peter and Andrew. They're partners with James and John. They've got a little business going, a couple of fishing boats. These four guys, they are experienced, hardened, professional fishermen. Fishing is a complex trade, and doing it well, making a living out of it, and staying alive in the process takes a lot of experience, a lot of knowledge of the elements and nature, physical strength, skill, and sheer determination. Maybe you saw the Trawler Men series recently on the BBC. These are men of a different calibre to most of us. They're gritty men. They weather the elements. They work night and day. They have rock solid constitutions. So were Peter and Andrew and James and John. Real successful, solid, professional fishermen. Incidentally, before I go on, because it's relevant to the to the passage and relevant to the point that I'm going to make. Have you ever wondered why these people fished at night? I did. And it's actually quite an interesting explanation. This business of why they fish at night has actually been looked into by people who understand the environment of the land of Israel, the culture, all the things that make it different from living here. And they've come up with two explanations as to why fishing at night was preferable. The first explanation is they fished at night because, as the theory goes, that in the daylight, in the Sea of Galilee, which is quite a small sea, in the daylight, the fish can actually see the net. And so they swim away from it because it's visible, so they go the other way. But of course, at night, they can't see the net, and so they swim straight into it. And the other explanation is, because of the climate and the local environment and so on, it's apparently a phenomenon that the fish come to the surface more at night time. In the daytime they go deep, and at night time they come to the surface, which of course makes it much easier to scoop them out of the water with your nets. So they fished at night, they were nocturnal. In the passage that we read, Peter and Andrew and James and John have been out all night fishing. And yet on this particular night, despite the fact that the theory says that the fish can't see the net and they come to the surface, on this particular night, as with the way of all these things when you go fishing, on this particular night, the fish have eluded them. They have caught nothing. And come morning, they've decided to call it a night, and they've come back to the land. They're tired, they're hungry, they're a little bit fed up, and despite all their experience and knowledge, they're empty-handed. Now, before we go any further, let me tell you what we're doing tonight. Tonight we're looking at what it means to be a real disciple, because these fishermen were called by Jesus to be real disciples. In fact, tonight's sermon, from this passage, we see two calls and a response. Two calls and a response. And now we're ready to announce the first call. The first call is a call to do unusual things. Let me pick up the story for you where we got to. So, imagine the scene. Okay, you need imagination tonight for tonight's sermon. So here we are, the guys have come back from the night's fishing, and we've read that the fishermen are, in verse 2, the fishermen have gone from the boats and they're washing their nets. They're just repairing them and tidying them and cleaning them, ready for the next night's fishing. And along comes this wannabe religious leader stroke healer. Remember, this is very early in the life of Jesus, in the ministry of Jesus. He's started to make a name for himself. He's healed some people. He's thrown a few demons out. And everybody's talking about him. He's the latest new thing. And so along bods this 30-ish religious leader stroke healer. And what do religious leaders and healers do? They teach people. They spout theological truths, don't they? And so he borrows Peter's boat for a while, and Peter and the other fishermen, because they're professionals, they carry on mending the nets. Now, I'm presuming they're sitting not very far away from their boats, and so presumably they can hear what Jesus is saying, but they're not really getting involved much in it. And Jesus finishes preaching to the multitude. And verse 4 says, when he had stopped speaking, Jesus said to Simon, and remember, he knows Simon, we've met him in the previous chapter, he was at Simon's house, so he's got a fledgling relationship with Simon. So now he had stopped speaking, he said to Simon, launch out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch. Can you hear Peter's cynical thoughts? You don't fish during the day, remember. You fish at night. And this religious guy has turned up and is telling this professional fisherman, let's go fishing. It's a beautiful sunny morning. What do you think Peter was thinking? This idiot hasn't got the first clue. Everybody in Galilee knows you don't catch fish in the daylight. I tell you what, Jesus, I'll leave the preaching to you. You leave the fishing to me. I'm the professional. I think he was very cynical. What's Jesus doing here? He's coming to Peter and he's asking him to do something just plain stupid. It's against every single piece of professional wisdom that Peter knows. You just don't catch fish in the day, Jesus. Jesus is asking Peter to do something very unusual, something absolutely and totally outside of his comfort zone, to use a very modern phrase. Something mad, something completely alien to his modern human wisdom. Do you recognise Peter's reaction? When we are called by God to do crazy, silly, stupid things, do you react the same? I do. I hesitate. I think, oh my goodness, that's a crazy thing to do. Why do we do that? Why do we react like that? Is it the fear of looking foolish? Is it fear of failure? Is it fear of losing control? This is a real challenge, isn't it? None of us likes looking silly. Well, at least I don't. Maybe you don't either. Peter didn't like looking silly either. Can you imagine what the people would have said? What is Peter doing out on the lake in the day? Catching fish? Don't be silly. He should know better than that. He's got that new guy with him. You could imagine why Peter might well have said to Jesus, no. But he did obey, didn't he? He did actually go. We'll see why in a moment. But just before we do, I want to point something out to you that I think is very significant here. This is my basis, really, this and Peter's reaction, for why I think it's a cynical reaction, and it's important to establish that. Look at exactly the words of verse 4. Jesus says to Peter, launch out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch. Launch out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch. Not to see if we catch anything. No, it's quite certain. Peter, launch out into the depth. Simon, keep calling him Peter, don't I? Simon Peter, same difference. Launch out into the deep and let down your net for a catch. Quite certain. There's confidence. Of course there was a catch waiting, by divine appointment. But Peter doesn't know that. Anyway, Peter's been listening to Jesus preach as he mended his nets, and something has made him intrigued enough to obey. He's realised that this new religious teacher come healer wannabe guy has actually got some level of authority. He's personally seen this guy heal his mother-in-law from a fever. So he knows he's not a charlatan. He knows there's something about Jesus. He knows he's got authority over some levels of sickness and some evil spirits. Some levels of authority and power. And so Peter obeys because he recognises Jesus' authority. That's a very important point. But I believe he obeys with some reservations, because look at his answer. Simon answered and said to him, Master, here comes the objection. We've toiled all night. We've been out there. We've tried hard. And we know our stuff. We've toiled all night and caught nothing. There's no fish to be caught. Nevertheless, here we go. At your word, because he's recognised Jesus has some authority. Nevertheless, at your word, I will let down the net. Contrast what Jesus said to him. Jesus said, Simon Peter, go out into the deep, let down your net for a catch. And Peter says to him, well, okay, I'll let down my net. Do you see the difference? He's not expecting to catch anything. He really isn't. He's doing it to humour Jesus. He recognises he's a man of authority, and so he's prepared to go through the public humiliation of taking his boat out but he's absolutely convinced he's not going to catch anything. Because after all, if he did think he could catch something, he'd still be out there, wouldn't he? Let's face it. So, let's paraphrase his words. I respect you enough to indulge you, even though I, Peter the professional fisherman, know we won't catch anything. I think we can learn quite a lot from Peter's reaction here. Here is cynicism and negativity. He's already decided, because he knows best, that he's not going to catch anything. Friend, as you are called by God, as you are called by Jesus, to do unusual and difficult things, things outside of your comfort zone, be very careful about negative, cynical attitudes. Beware of thinking that you know better. Anyway, they go fishing. By hook or by crook, Peter's gone fishing. And we read the story, you know what happens. Verse 6. And when they had done this, they caught a great number of fish. And their net was breaking. In fact, so many fish that the boat started to sink. So many fish that they had to call James and John from the shore. James, John, quick! We've got an enormous number of fish. We can't pull them out of the water. Previously unprecedented. Remember, you don't fish in the day. You just don't catch fish in the day. They've caught all the fish in the Sea of Galilee. An enormous number of fish. What was Peter's reaction? Remember, before he was cynical, negative, humouring Jesus. But now, in verse 8, he fell down at Jesus' knees. Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord. Where's Peter's cynicism now? Gone. As he bows before Jesus, ashamed at his doubt and unbelief. Simon Peter's reaction here is quite significant, I think. The way that he's made supremely conscious of his own sin, his own doubt, his own negative, cynical view. And he says, depart from me, Lord. I am a sinful man. He's realised that he was wrong. And you notice how he's behaving? He's fallen down at Jesus' knees. He's prostrated himself. He worships Jesus. Depart from me, Lord. I'm a sinful man. I'm not worthy to be with you. You're clearly very different from me. You're clearly not a man like me. You're clearly not a man prone to cynicism and negativity. You're a man of authority. You're a man of your word. You're a man with amazing supernatural powers. And I'm not. And he is worshipping. And we see that obedience. Peter went fishing even though he didn't want to. And his obedience has led him to his position of worshipping Jesus. And obedience leads to true worship. You know, true worship isn't something that you just summon up from inside yourself. True worship is always a response to what God has done or who God is. His differentness, his amazing purity, his astonishing acts, his authority, his power, his difference. True worship, you see, is God-centered. You need to see your own sin to truly worship God. You need to see your own sin to truly appreciate who Jesus Christ is. Simon Peter here has seen Jesus Christ in a new light. And I wonder if you've seen Jesus in a new light, as powerful and authoritative and without sin. And have you begun to truly worship this Jesus Christ, who is very God himself. What's Jesus' reaction to Peter? Does he dismiss him as unworthy to follow him? You wouldn't think that cynical, negative people would make very good disciples, would you? No, Jesus, pick somebody else. He's not the right guy. No. That's not his reaction, is it? Jesus doesn't reject Peter and his friends. The opposite. He draws them to himself. What's the purpose of this miracle with the fish? What's the real purpose? Is this just a show of catching a huge haul of fish in the daytime? Is it just a party trick? A religious conjuring act? To wow the people? No. This miracle has a very serious purpose. This miracle is, if you like, the attention grabber. Jesus attracts their real attention so that he can focus on the central task of his day. What is that task? Well, the central task of Jesus' day that day was to call Peter and his friends with a second call. Not just a call to do unusual things, but a much more significant call. This time, a call to a new way of life. Jesus wants Peter and his friends to become fishers of men. Not fishers of fish, fishers of men. And this is a really important role in gospel work. Jesus says that to them, doesn't he? Down there in verse 10, second half of verse 10. From now on, you will catch men. From now on, you will catch men. Notice the authority again. Before it was, go out into the deep and put down your nets for a catch. Now I'm going to make you into fishers of men. There is authority, there is power. You know he means it. He's just demonstrated he can do it. Look, imagine an army recruiting situation. You've just got a whole bunch of new young people and it's their first day in the army. You look at them standing before you. Their hairs are all unkempt. They're slouching a bit. They're unfit. They're ill-prepared. They're a bit casual. They don't look like a lean, mean fighting machine. A ragbag bunch of men. And the sergeant comes in. The training sergeant, and his uniform is pressed and his hair is trimmed, and he marches in with professionalism, and he marches up and down, and he tells this bunch of ragbag men that in 8 weeks' time they will be efficient soldiers capable of fighting. Do you believe him? Of course you do. Why? Because he has authority, because he has power, because you can just tell that he's good at his job. He has authority over the way these men live and how they will train over the next few weeks. He has authority and power over every area of their life, and he will make them and fashion them into efficient fighting men. And if you doubt it at all you have to do is look out of the window and see the previous set of intakes. They are just in their passing out parade, and there they are, lined up, trained, honed, fit men, walking in step, obeying and following orders. And you know this man, because of his authority and his power, can change these men. It's the same with Jesus. We should have no doubt at all about Jesus' ability to train these rough, unkempt men to be able to train them into fishers of men. He has already demonstrated his power and authority by giving Peter the fish, the real fish. And if he can do that and confound even the professional fishermen, can we doubt that he can also train them to catch men as well? Of course he can. Now, what about you and me? Can we be fishers of men? Can Jesus, working in our lives, retrain us to be fishers of men? successful men, successful fishers of men, because this is the need of the hour. There's a world out there of people ignorant of the good news of Jesus Christ, ignorant of a Saviour come to save his people from their sins. Jesus needs disciples wholeheartedly committed to learning a new trade, a new way of life. Have you signed up for this? Note what Jesus says to them. Note the reassurance. Again, in verse 10, I skipped over it, but do not be afraid. Jesus knows he's asking them a big thing, an enormous thing. It's a difficult thing to catch men. But recognize him for who he is, God Almighty himself. We might well shrink from his power and authority, as Peter did. Depart from me, Lord. I'm not worthy for this task. I'm too conscious of my own sin. I couldn't possibly serve you. But Jesus doesn't condemn Peter for his sin. Have you noticed that? Nowhere does he say to him, "You did the wrong thing, Peter. I'm not interested." Not at all. Jesus covers it. And he covers yours too, if you follow him in faith. No, the opposite, in fact. Jesus encourages these men. He promises them a relationship of trust, of master-disciple partnership. A modern word would be mentor. Jesus says, "I'll be your mentor. Come live with me. I'll help you. I'll assist you." It's going to be a close, forgiving relationship. Not some distance learning correspondence course. No. Come live with me and work alongside with me and see me at work and learn by experience. Do you know, an uncertain future is far easier to face when we do it alongside an experienced teacher. Peter here was challenged to overcome his fear and sign up for the big adventure. And so were his friends. Now, these were a small bunch of ill-prepared disciples in a big world. Your numbers here at Shepshed Evangelical Free Church, what, 70 at best? In a town of 14,000 people, you're barely half of 1% of the population. That's a tiny, tiny, insignificant influence. Isn't that scary? Humanly speaking, you've got no chance of making an impact on the other 99.5% of the people who live here. But Jesus can help you make the difference if you answer his call to live life a different way. You see, a true disciple is willing to change. Change his employment. Change where she lives. Change the way they think. Try new things. Take risks for the gospel. Give up the things that hold them back. Are you willing to trust God and change as Jesus calls you to a new way of living? Or are you still be afraid? Don't be afraid. That's what Jesus says. So, there are the calls. A call to do unusual things beyond our comfort zone, and a call to a new way of life, a new way of living. How did the disciples respond? Well, their response was, in verse 11, a new set of priorities. They didn't reject the call. They could have rejected Jesus, but they didn't. They chose to follow him. And there are two aspects to their new set of priorities. They had an appropriate response to the call. They followed him. It says that at the end of verse 11 there. They followed him. Jesus is Lord, after all. He's a better fisherman than Peter was. And he knows more about computer support than I do. And he knows everything about everything you do too. In fact, he knows how to do everything perfectly. He has total power over nature. Brings the fish out when they shouldn't be there. Demonstrates his power to still the storm. Isn't Jesus worth following? Peter thought so. So did his friends. And they followed Jesus, the one who would train them to catch men. Now, let me speak to the young people for a second here. Peter and James and John and Andrew chose to associate themselves with Jesus and learn a new trade. Young people, be very careful who you follow in life, who you hang around with, who you choose as your friends. Because we learn an awful lot, and it influences our behaviour an awful lot, who we spend time with. So choose carefully and choose wisely. And lastly, let me show you also the response of the disciples when they set a new set of priorities. Not only do they follow Jesus, but they didn't do it half-heartedly. It was a radical devotion to their new way of living. Because, I skipped a bit. Look there down the end of verse 11. So when they had brought their boats to land, they forsook all and followed him. They left everything and followed Jesus. That means they didn't just follow him physically along the road. They followed his lifestyle. They followed his priorities, his teaching, his instruction, his behaviour. They changed every aspect of their lives because of Jesus. They forsook all after having brought their boats to land. Do you know, leaving a boat in biblical times, that was a radical, costly step. Boats were expensive in biblical times because there wasn't an abundance of wood. Wood was a scarce material. And so a boat would have been an enormous investment. It's akin to you or I leaving behind our house. The biggest financial thing you've ever bought were probably these boats. So don't doubt the sincerity of their response. This was a costly action to leave their boats behind. And so this challenges us, doesn't it? What about us? What about you? Has Jesus made a radical impact on your life? Have you heard these calls to do unusual things, calls to live differently? Have you become his disciple? Christian, if you have answered that call, are you living consistently like a real disciple does? Answering those calls, living differently, doing unusual things. Have you responded to Jesus' call with a new set of priorities and leaving and forsaking everything that slows you down and hinders you in this great gospel task? The people that live around you are obsessed with the things of this life. Jobs, cars, TVs, holidays, beer, wine, houses, money, status, power. But is the way that you live your life different from that? Are you showing a difference in your priorities? Jesus calls his disciples to follow him. He prioritizes his Father's work. He influenced people to think about the unseen world, to consider their status before God as judge. He gave up everything that hindered his mission, no matter what the personal cost was. And he calls you to do the same. And ultimately, in giving up his very life, he died for mankind. Because he wants to fish them from their futile, self-centered lives and land them into God's